Welcome into Locked On Patriots for Thursday, May 10th, 2018. Mark Schofield back in the big chair for this Thursday installment of your favorite Patriots podcast. A couple of things on tap today. We're going to talk play 7 on our countdown of the Patriots' top 10 offensive plays of the 2017 season. A little AFC East rivalry action. We're going to talk football and film. That series rolls on with a look at Any Given Sunday. I'm going to be joined by Michael Kist, co-host of the Kist and Solak show and friend of the Locked On Patriots podcast. We're going to break down, among other things, that incredible speech by Al Pacino at the end of the film. We're also going to talk Shane Wyman, undrafted free agent tight end out of Northern Illinois. Could he possibly be the Patriots' reserve tight end of the future? Who knows? But first, some listener shout-outs. As always, you can hit me up on Twitter, at Mark Schofield. Love it when people reach out. Reminder to follow me on Twitter. Follow the work over at InsideThePylon.com. Check out the videos over at YouTube.com/InsideThePylon. Also, keep an eye out over at ProFootballWeekly.com. I've got a piece in the works. Going to be doing a series on some new offensive coordinators and what to expect when they meet up with their new quarterbacks come the fall. But as I said, I want to start with some listener shout-outs. Some fans of the show have been really enjoying the football and film segments. I want to shout-out a good friend of the show, John Limerakis. He's a great friend of the show. You can follow him on Twitter, at John Limerakis, which is at J-O-H-N-L-I-M-B-E-R-K-I-S. Reached out about the best of times. Had a little bit of a mind meld there, but he indicated in a tweet that he did not see this movie, but he learned upon researching it that Adam Sandler borrowed the concept for his movie Grown Ups and the basketball game from this movie. And that, John, is a movie that I haven't seen. So I'm pretty excited that you reached out with that. Again, give John a follow on Twitter. Also, Ian McDonald, he's another big friend of the show. Always love hearing from Ian. And he has reached out already with a look ahead at Brian's song. And yes, Brian Son is going to be on this list, believe me. I'm just going to get to it a little bit later in the summer. I got to sort of work up the nerve to talk Brian Son, friends. It's going to get dusty. You can follow Ian on Twitter, at Ian, C-M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. That's Ian McDonald, at Ian, C-M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. And finally, a shout out to Erica, and I hope I get this pronunciation right. And actually, you know what? I know I'm not going to, but Erica Prohl. She is at Erica's Homes for You, at E-R-I-C-A-S-H-O-M-E-S, the number 4U. Patriots fan coming to us from Ontario who checked out Varsity Blues and enjoyed it, which I think is fantastic. Good to hear that somebody is digging some Varsity Blues. And also, if you happen to be in the Ontario area and need real estate advice, Erica is a real estate agent in Ontario. And how cool would that be if we can get Locked On listeners, Locked On Patriots listeners, hooked up with a real estate agent if they need one. So that would be fantastic. You can check her out again on Twitter, at Erica's Homes for You. Now let's talk an undrafted rookie free agent tight end, because if there's something to talk about on May 10th, it's an undrafted rookie free agent tight end. And we're going to talk Shane Wyman. Talk about him briefly now. He undrafted, as I said, out of Northern Illinois. We did study him for the Inside the Pylon Draft Guide, which you can still pick up over at itpdraftguide.com. Dante Ferrignoli was the lead scout on him. Fantastic young football mind, Dante. He's somebody that you should definitely be following on Twitter. You can follow him over on Twitter at Dante, D-A-N-T-E, F-A-R-G-N-O-L-I. That's at Dante Ferrignoli. And he is also the incoming scouting assistant for the Reese's Senior Bowl. I've talked a ton about the Senior Bowl. It's an important part of the scout and draft season and the evaluation process. You get to see these guys up close and personal for an entire week. Dante has a fantastic opportunity in front of him, moving on from being a coach and a recruiting assistant at Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. He was a training camp intern with the Chiefs for 2 straight years. I've gotten to know him a little bit. He did work for us over at ITP as part of the draft guide. Couldn't be happier for Dante getting a great job down in Mobile as part of the Senior Bowl. And as I said, he did the lead report on Shane Wyman. when he looked at him, had a year one projection on him as a potential four-phase special teamer. He can also be your fullback and contribute as a blocker from any alignment, effective receiver off of play action, but will struggle to beat man coverage. But that's what you're getting as a potential rookie undrafted free agent, somebody that can contribute at least in all four phases of special teams. As a year three projection, versatile tight end, H-back and fullback, who brings competitive and physical toughness as a blocker and on special teams. Does not possess the dynamic receiving ability to be a starter, but can be a effective working zones, off of play action, and in the red zone. And if you think about sort of the Patriots tight end options right now, obviously Robert Gronkowski, the nightmare is over. He is coming back. Although what was a little nightmarish, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but Gronkowski firing a minigun. And I mean, I'm not talking about a small gun. I'm talking one of those Gatling gun type things, which was terrifying to see. I mean, that's some firepower, but go live your life, Gronk, man. I mean, Gronk in the offseason is fun Gronk, I guess. Anyway, quick digression there, but Gronkowski is back in the fold. You do have Dwayne Allen. You do have Troy Nichols, who you've added. Jacob Hollister, Will Ty, Ryan Izzo as well. So it's a deep tight end room before you even get to Shane Wyman. But then you look at sort of the fullback spot. You've got James Devlin, and that's it. Now, I'm not so sure that the Patriots are going to keep two tight ends, but Wyman's sort of positional flexibility allows you to use him as a fullback, and he can contribute as a fullback. And as Dante said, somebody that can contribute as a blocker from any alignment. And if you look at the tight end roster as constructed, you know, he's going to be competing for a spot with guys like Troy Nicholas, Ryan Izzo, and Will Ty, you know, sort of as that blocking tight end. You know, I think you look at Gronkowski, he's sort of your tight end one, that move versatile guy. Jacob Hollister is probably next in line there. Dwayne Allen does a little bit of both worlds, but he's more of a blocking type. And then you've got room for your tight end three. And I think Wyman can get himself into the mix for that spot. Looking at strengths on Shane Wyman from Dante's scouting report, adequate height with marginal arm length, sporting a thick body frame with some excess weight in his midsection. Well, something we all have, I guess, or at least I do. I'm working on it as we speak. Adequate athletic ability with solid explosiveness and balance. Adequate foot speed and change of direction with marginal leaping ability. Aligned as both a Y and an H-back with heavy blocking responsibilities. Excellent competitive and physical toughness brings an attitude in the run game to make up for his shortcomings and should excel on special teams. Aggressive and punishing on the first level, fires off the ball with good explosiveness, does not accept standstills no matter the size of the defensive lineman. What's that phrase? It's not the size of the dog in the fight, but the size of the fight in the dog? You're getting that with Shane Wyman. Finishes his blocks no matter where the play ends up and looks to put defenders into the ground. As far as weaknesses, lack of height and arm length may hinder his ability in line and in man blocking schemes. Winning with a sheer aggression as a blocker will not come easy in the NFL. He will need to add core strength. When running a vertical route from a two-point stance, he will use false steps backwards. He will start backwards away from the line of scrimmage, which is something you have to fix when you get to the National Football League. Lacks the lawn speed to separate vertically from defenders. He will get everything he can in front of him after the catch, but does not have any elusive qualities. Overall, according to Dante, a versatile tight end, H-back, and fullback, who brings competitive and physical toughness as a blocker and on special teams. Does not possess the dynamic receiving ability to be a starter, but can be effective working zones, off of play action, and in the red zone. A player you can win with. As an undrafted free agent option at the tight end position, I don't know if you could ask for anything more. Now, can Winman sort of win a job, win a roster spot? That remains to be seen. But as I said the other day, the Patriots have some interesting UDFA options. You know, we talked about the cornerback, Jackson from Maryland, who's had some off-the-field issues. Shane Wyman as well might find a way onto the Patriots roster come summertime. Up next, we're going to talk play 7 on our countdown of the Patriots' top 10 offensive plays of the year. And a little bit later, it's time for those inches right in front of your face. So that's ahead with me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield back with you now, and we're going to dive back into our series, counting down the top 10 offensive plays of the Patriots 2017 season. In case you've missed plays 10 through 8, play 10 was a touchdown to James White in that Sunday night game against the Atlanta Falcons. Play 9, touchdown pass from Tom Brady to Chris Hogan on that Thursday night game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the most recent play, play number 8, we had to dive into Super Bowl 52 for a minute. And we talked about the touchdown pass from Brady to Robert Gronkowski that gave the Patriots that short-lived lead in the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 52. What might have been. Now it's time for play 7, and we're going to go back a little bit earlier in the season. We're going to talk about a rivalry game between the New England Patriots and the New York Jets. This was back in week 6. Patriots coming off that short little bye week after that Thursday night victory over Tampa Bay. Their first AFC East tilt of the season against their rival, the New York Jets, at MetLife Stadium. Again, week 6, Patriots 3-2 coming into this game. But the Jets at this time were also on top the standings in the AFC East. They had lost their first two games, but with 3 straight victories, wins over Miami, Jacksonville, and Cleveland, both the Patriots and the Jets entered this game with identical 3-2 records. It was not what people were expecting to see when these teams had their first meeting of the season, but it was what we got to see on week 6. And this game was tied early in the third quarter. The Patriots faced a 3rd-and-11 just outside the Jets' 30-yard line, or about the 33-yard line. They used 21 offensive personnel, 2 running backs, 1 tight end, 2 wide receivers, Brady in the shotgun, and he looks again for Robert Gronkowski.
For the Jets, it's another 3rd-and-long for New England. Lewis sets up as a receiver and now will flank Brady. Play clock down to 2. Brady steps up again. Brady, it's complete. Rob Gronkowski, they're not going to stop him. Touchdown, Patriots. A flag down at the 23.
I think this one's going to stand. Appears to be holding against the Jets.
Brady's in the meeting. Touchdown.
The play did stand, as indicated there by Dan Fouts, joined by Ian Eagle on the call. And the play came on something called the levels concept. It was a passing concept that I'd actually broken down the week before that game. Multi-level, as the name might indicate, passing concept where you have receivers running in cuts from the outside towards the middle of the field at different depths, different levels. On this play, we get to see Brandon Cooks, he's the receiver to the right side of the field. He runs a deep out route joined by Deion Lewis out of the backfield running a quick little out route. So on the right-hand side of the field for Brady, he has Cooks on a deep out route and Deion Lewis on that shallow route. Now the left side is where all the real magic happens because Gronkowski is aligned in a wing to the left with Chris Hogan just outside of him. Hogan runs a deep out route and Gronkowski runs sort of that deep dig route over the middle. So the levels to this play are Deion Lewis in the flat from the right, Brandon Cooks on that deep out route to the right, and then Gronkowski coming from left to right over the middle on that intermediate dig route. Now, because of the alignment between Hogan and Gronkowski, that creates traffic for the defense. The tight split helps Gronkowski on the play. He gets a free release off the line of scrimmage, and Hogan creates traffic working against his defender, which makes it tougher for rookie safety Jamal Adams to cover Gronkowski. Brady then sort of hits Gronkowski right in stride, and the play goes for a touchdown that the Patriots needed at that point in time. Again, this was a 14-14 game. When this play happened, the Patriots would go on to win this game and sort of get themselves really back on track for the 2017 season after a start that, you know, people really weren't too pleased with. You know, now they come back. They get that Thursday night win against Tampa Bay, which we just talked about previously on one of these shows, counted down these plays. And then they get now the victory against their division rivals, the New York Jets, on the road, which is always nice to get our divisional win on the road. You know, and this really set up. You had the Tampa Bay win, the Jets win, the Atlanta win. They go on to win 8 straight games. You know, to go from 2-2 to 10-2, you know, that's a nice little run for New England in the middle of the season. If it wasn't for that hiccup they had that Monday night at Miami, we might have been talking about a 14-2 season, which still would have ended in disappointment and heartbreak and bitterness, but it would have been a 14-2 season. So again, that's play seven, Brady Gronkowski on the levels concept back in week six against the New York Jets. Up next, it's time to talk about those inches in front of your face. I'm going to be joined by Michael Kist. We're going to be breaking down Any Given Sunday. That's ahead with me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots.
I don't know what to say, really. 3 minutes till the biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today. Either we heal as a team or we're going to crumble. Inch by inch, play by play, till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen. Believe me. And we can stay here, get the kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell. 1 inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm too old. I look around, I see these young faces, and I think, I mean, I made every wrong choice a middle-aged man can make. I pissed away all my money, believe it or not. I chased off anyone who's ever loved me. And lately, I can't even stand the face I see in the mirror. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that inch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that inch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's the team, gentlemen.
Hell yeah.
And either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals. That's football, guys. That's all it is. Now, what are you gonna do?
That, of course, is Al Pacino as Tony D'Amato, the coach of the Sharks from Any Given Sunday. And look, I could just sit here and talk and wax poetically about any given Sunday for the next 10, 15 minutes. But I thought for a movie of this magnitude, for a scene of this magnitude, it was important to have a guest. And so I brought on a good friend of the show. He is one half of the Kist and Solak show over at Bleeding Green Nation. He has also contributed to Bleeding Green Nation as well as Locked On Eagles. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't do that anymore. I was just thrown off by the shirt he's wearing there. No, he's a good friend of the show and a contributor to Inside the Pylon. That is Michael Kist at Michael Kist NFL. What is going on, brother?
Mark, it has been too long since we spoke. I think how many times have we spoken since the Super Bowl? I think it was only once, and that wasn't even by design. That was on another show where you didn't know you were going to be on with me. I feel like you've been avoiding me since then.
Perhaps I've been ducking you a little bit. Perhaps. I mean, because let's be frank here, kids. When your team suffers a brutal, gut-wrenching, heartbreaking defeat that you still aren't over yet, sometimes you don't like to be reminded of it. But that fate did not befall Tony D'Amato and his Sharks in any given Sunday. So, before you came on, obviously, I played the entire locker room speech. And so I think the only appropriate way to begin this is to ask you this question. Do you fight for that inch?
Yeah, I mean, I fight for that inch every day, and one of the ways that I fight for that inch is, you know, I'm a father of a 8-month-old teeny tiny baby Augustus, and the inch is a difference between getting the water and the formula inside the bottle and the difference between spilling that formula outside of the bottle and then getting some water on it to where it hardens like the plaster of Paris, and you've just got these just globs of hard substance all over your counter spaces throughout the entire house. It's absolutely disgusting. So I have to fight for that inch. And if I'm off by an inch when I'm wiping them or I don't have them guarded correctly, I get crapped on all over. So it's a metaphor for me as a father is getting that inch every single day, especially when it comes to being crapped on, for sure.
That's a fantastic, fantastic answer. And I think it does set up the fact that there are life lessons in this movie, surprisingly enough. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, we've talked about on this show a couple of football movies. We've done Varsity Blues. We've done, you know, we've done The Best of Times. We've done The Program.
The Worst of Times?
The Best of Times, my friend. No, we're not doing that right now. But I think what's interesting about Any Given Sunday is that speech. You know, it just lingers with people. I mean, I queued it up a couple of times today, and yeah. I still get goosebumps listening to it. I know you do too.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely when he's self-aware enough throughout this speech to talk about how he's failed and how the team is fractured. But he's saying, if you could just come together right now, just for this moment, just to look at the guy next to you and get it done despite what's happened in the past, despite LL Cool J punching Jamie Foxx twice when they shot that one scene, despite all of those things, those difficulties that every team probably goes through in the locker room and in life, to be able to look each other in the eye and know that the other one has each other's back. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a message that I think would resonate with anybody that has played team sports in that manner.
And what's incredible about that scene is, you know, the buy-in from Jamie Foxx. You see it like unfold throughout the course of that speech, and the way Stone cuts it, where there's these like weird cutaways to like, you know, Pacino just being frozen and just like putting his hands through his hair, or then he's got like the rolled up play sheet that he like points in Jamie Foxx's direction. Those like weird cutaways, but it slowly builds to this moment where, you know, he gets the buy-in from Jamie Foxx or Willie Beeman, and you know, he ends it beautifully, which is just, now what are you gonna do? He just throws open that question, and the locker room goes berserk, and it's just a great scene.
Do you think that Cap bought in? Because there's a quick shot of Cap at the end of that, and it looks like Cap is still salty, man. Like, he's in that position where he's that veteran quarterback that's been hurt all season. He's got this young up-and-comer, and at the end, I don't know if he bought in.
I you know, that's a good question, and, you know, I was thinking that same thing when I was watching this again today, and I think in a sense you're right that he didn't buy in, but I think he bought into the fact that his end was here, you know, that this was going to be it for him, and that, you know, no matter what happened in this game, the rest, you know, he was over, and he could see it in D'Amato in a sense that D'Amato was coming to grips with sort of his own sort of mortality as a coach and realizing that, you know, his sort of hard and fast rules that he wouldn't bend for anybody have begun to bend in that speech. And I think that's sort of the recognition that's going through Cap at that moment.
Yeah, that's got to be an emotional moment for him to be going through that. Hearing D'Amato say those things about his own life, and then understanding that his career is coming to an end at that same time. So more of a reflective moment. It's not for him to get all jacked up.
Right.
Yeah. So I could see where you're seeing that right there. It would be very interesting to see if they went with a because you saw the buy-in from Steam and Willie Beeman after a lot of his career was, you know, not trusting anyone whatsoever. And they had that scene where he's talking about throwing, you know, your mom is ringing the dinner bell and all that stuff. They had the talk they had on the plane. And Fox has just pretty much tuned him out for the most part. I do find it interesting. I was reading this. Jamie Foxx wasn't initially the lead for this role. It was actually Puff Daddy. And they had an actual combine where they brought in all these people. Yeah, Michael Clark Duncan and Lawrence Taylor were both like fighting for the Lawrence Taylor role. And they were like, well, it's actually the Lawrence Taylor role, so we might as well give it to him. But the quarterbacks were Puff Daddy and Jamie Foxx. And apparently Puff Daddy threw like a girl, so they actually gave it to Jamie. They gave it to Jamie Foxx. But yeah, I mean, just the evolution, the arc from Jamie Foxx going to a guy reading a paper on the sideline and not really caring. He was a cornerback in college, which spoke, you know, a lot of things about black quarterbacks in the NFL at the time. You got to remember this was made in 1999 before, while those conversations were still pretty hot and heavy. People forget that. And then, you know, having the arc to where he absolutely puts all of his faith into D'Amato and ends up joining his team after the fact, after they win the big game. It was pretty cool, man. I think it's still present today as far as a lot of the lessons that they talk about in that movie.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was kind of how, you know, a lot of the football movies that we've talked about on this show so far, The Program, you know, Varsity Blues to an extent as well, they deal with sort of like the dark underbelly of whether it's high school football, whether it's college football. Now in this one, you're getting sort of the dark side of pro football. You're getting the injury stuff with Lawrence Taylor, you know, some of the steroid stuff, which gets sort of, you know, discussed on the periphery as well. Yeah. I mean, I think the movie does a pretty good job of sort of introducing some of that stuff to it, but not having it be like overbearing in your face.
Yeah, and James Woods playing Dr. Harvey Mandrake,
right?
The guy with no scruples and flubbing medical reports so that Shark LaVey can come in and get his bonus and making him sign a waiver. So, you know, if he dies on the field, they won't be liable or whatever. Right. I mean, obviously that's over the top, but there are a lot of the points in the movie where Lawrence Taylor is like, hey man, what about one of those shots, or, you know, what about one of those painkillers, like that type of situation. You got to think that kind of goes on. And I know a lot of NFL players actually really, like this movie too. So there's some truth there, even if it's over the top, as far as over the top that he went with it, Oliver Stone did anyway. There is some truth to that underlying part of it. And with Cap Rooney, I mean, you can't tell me that Tony Romo hasn't kind of been in that same situation when he was trying to battle back from his collarbone and his body's breaking down on him. He's seeing Dak Prescott, you know, become this quarterback that's taken his job, and he's trying to fight back from it. I mean, that's a painful thing, bro. Bodies break down, you get older, and, you know, it's a mental, it's an emotional ride, it's a physical roller coaster as well. So I like some of that. And then you also get just the bonkers, the drugs, the chainsawing, the car in half, which Lawrence Taylor did, which I think in real life he probably would have done.
Probably would have, yep.
Yeah, so even the over the top stuff is like, yeah, I could definitely see Lawrence Taylor doing literally all of these things.
Yeah, basically. What about the football scenes themselves? Because sometimes, you know, in football movies, the football footage, you know, the action on the field, the gameplay isn't that good. But I thought it was pretty well done, or at least believable in this movie. It wasn't, you know, too hokey or anything like that.
Yeah, one of the things that they were told is you can't put cameras on the field. And they were basically like, F you. We're going to put them wherever the hell we want them. And if someone hits the cameraman, well, that's better for the scene. So, yeah, I do think some of the shots were too quick for me as far as the way it was shot. But overall, just the physicality that came through, like you see it from the first hit with Cap Rooney where he gets hit by three guys and that's the injury that puts him out.
Right.
Apparently with the stuntman, like they almost tore his ACL like a couple of times trying to get that, like that shot, that visceral shot. So I think as far as the physicality, I thought it came through well. They were putting cameras on, they put a camera with a helmet, and they ran around with that, so you have the view of the running back. And then they had a camera on the shoulder of somebody, so you kind of got like that weird like field view of what they kind of see at the ground level. I thought they did some really cool things with that. So the way it was shot was cool. Some of it was too tight at times. You like them pull back just a little bit, just as a football nerd like myself. But I think for the general audience, I think it came across pretty well.
Can we talk about those Dallas Knights uniforms? Because look, I, you know, when I first saw this, you know, as somewhat of a football purist, I guess, in a sense, I saw those things. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I was with you until that. Like, these uniforms, man. And they had the field that had that, like, sort of, like, Knights of the Templar logo, like, at the 50-yard line. I thought that was, like, the one thing that I was just kind of like, I couldn't get on board with.
The fact that they wore, you know, the last game that they played, the biggest game, that kind of bothered me. They look like the Crusaders out there. Their uniforms look like what the bottom of my toilet looks like during the morning after a night on the town. Like, it was just this mash of just yellowish, and maybe sort of some blood in there. We don't know where that's coming from. We got to figure this out. But they had, obviously, they couldn't get the NFL licenses because of the content in the movie, and the NFL advised all the teams not to lend a hand with anything after NFL Films had initially worked with them. But I feel like whoever was doing the design for that and approving that as well just did a terrible job, because those uniforms were atrocious, to say the least.
What you just heard was Michael Kiss pitch, his speech, his elevator pitch to be the next director of the Senior Bowl. He was describing what his, you know, hotel room looks like after a night at Veeps. There, with that sort of colorful little.
Are you going to throw there. This back in my face? You're going to try to sabotage my run to be the executive director of the Red Bull and Vodka Senior Bowl?
I'm all I'm really saying, Michael, is this: I have basically decided that I will just sort of step aside and. You know, I will be the guy to step aside. I will be the bigger man. If you want that job, the job will be yours. I'm just making sure that people know what they're getting.
Oh, no, it's going to be pure debauchery. There's going to be a tiger hunting a deer during the middle of the parade down Dolphin Street. We're going to have that going on. We're going to have a fan event of 50 rats. You get into a cage with 50 rats, and you got to beat those rats off. If you die, I mean, there's waivers involved. It's a Shark LaVey situation. You know what you're getting into when you step in that booth with those rats. So either way, as a credentialed media member, you get your first drink when you pick up your credentials, and then you have several drinks under your seat during the weigh-ins, because the weigh-ins are super weird. And then instead of conducting interviews with players in that weird spot where they kind of taper them off and have them in this, like, in the middle of the room while everyone watches them eat like a bunch of weirdos, we're going to take them out to Veeps. We're going to show them a good time. We're going to get them nice and loose. We're going to get the best dargarn Senior Bowl quotes you're ever going to get anywhere. It's going to show the true metal of a man when he's drunk and seeing what he's going to say.
Folks, if that's what you want from your Senior Bowl experience, you have to go support the candidacy of Michael Kist at Michael Kist NFL for the next executive director of the Senior Bowl. Now, Michael, before I let you go, we are talking films here. You know, we talk some Any Given Sunday. I've just started on this list of 20 films I'm working my way through, but what are some other football films that you've enjoyed?
Oh, man. I actually grew up a Notre Dame fan, so Rudy is up there for me. Obviously, Invincible has a special place in my heart. Friday Night Lights is excellent. I think that's probably one of my favorites. And I'm not a Tom Cruise fan. Jerry Maguire's kind of weird. Remember the Titans. I'll go Remember the Titans as well. Like, those are some of my favorites. But Friday Night Lights is up there for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to do Jerry Maguire just because it's on the list. North Dallas 40, you know, that's one that I think... Yeah, I mean, that was basically, you know, sort of Any Given Sunday before Any Given Sunday.
Right, yeah.
I mean, so I think that's a good one. Obviously, yeah, I'm going to put Invincible on here. The Replacements, that's going to be for Monday's show. I love that movie.
The quicksand part with Keanu Reeves, the quarterback, that speech reminds me so much of what I think is going to be the beginning of the career of Josh Allen, just the total collapse.
The beginning, the middle, and the end of the career of Josh Allen? Is that what you're saying?
What are we calling a career? Because you can call the CFL having a career. I mean, what is Johnny Manziel doing in the spring league? Is that a career? I don't know. I'm just saying.
Hey, I mean, he's getting paid to do something, I think, right?
I think he had a relapse, too. I think he had a...
I thought it was a reaction to medication.
It was a quote-unquote mishap with quote-unquote prescription medicine. So take that for what you will, dental listeners.
I mean, you know, they say what they have to say to get people through it. All right, my friend, let people know where they can find you, what you're working on right now, and where they can support your candidacy for executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl.
At Michael Kist NFL is where you can find me on Twitter right now. I'm working on a lot of off-season draft stuff, UDFA stuff for bleedinggreennation.com. Also, insidethepylon.com with my good friend Mark. And subscribe to BGN Radio. We did a lot of draft stuff. Me and Benjamin Solak on the Kist and Solak show. We do a lot of general NFL stuff as well. So it's not just all Eagles stuff. It's probably the least fan-based podcast that we have on the station. That is by design. So there's some other type of shows on there. But we have a good time talking about general football. I think we're knowledgeable dudes. I'm Miss Scouting Academy 2017, so I know what I'm talking about. So I'm getting that parade float down Dolphin Street, too, for being Miss Scouting Academy, for winning that Prove It competition, Mark. I'm making it happen now.
That a boy, my friend. That a boy, my friend. So, like I said, that would do it for this Thursday show. That would do it for this week because, look, friends, it's May. I mean, what do you want? Do you want me to spend Friday breaking down some UDFA who's probably not going to rake the roster? I mean, I can do that.
Fridays but for the boys.
Fridays in May, they're for the boys. And when Michael says that, he means he actually does go out and have a good time. I tend to the garden and mow the lawn because I'm a man. I'm 41. My days of, you know, glory are behind me. I get three nights a year, and I make the most of them down in Mobile, Alabama at Veats. But again, that will do it for today's show. Huge thank you to Michael for coming on. I'll be back Monday. Do some stuff at the outset. We'll continue counting down football plays. Patriots top 10 offensive plays of the year. Michael was not on for the show where we broke down the one and only play I'm going to talk about from Super Bowl 52 because, well,
you wouldn't be able to handle it because I'd be too happy. Yeah.
I mean, look, I only made it play 8, the Brady to Gronk touchdown near the end because that was when we had our last sliver of hope, and then you guys snatched good stuff away from bad stuff. And hey, you know, life goes on. I'm going to go drink.
I want you to know that it's not your fault.
It's not my fault,
Mark.
This is we're not doing the top 10 Matt Damon movies. I mean, I can do that. I mean, let's face it. It's, again, what are we going to do? What are we going to talk about in July until training camp?
I started a war of like conquerors on my timeline, doing polls, yelling at people about Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan. So that's kind of my brand right now, to be honest, I
think since this is locked on Patriots, I could probably do top 10 Boston movies.
You did a Toto show.
I did a Toto show. I don't know why people listen to this then anymore. All right, friends, that will do it. I'll be back Monday. Until then, keep it locked right here to me, Mark Schofield, and Locked on Patriots.